For October the 6th, 2023, we talk about The Lamplighters League, Cocoon, Resident Evil 4 Separate Ways, and much more. Welcome to Level 475. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Also, one of you has a ghost haunting the apartment or house or room.
I heard that, yes.
Yeah. I know. It's October, baby.
Okay. It's all right. It was just very funny. Yeah, what is that?
It could be there's construction outside on my end, and there was a plane passing over.
It might be one or both.
Why are ghosts doing construction?
Hi, Jala. Welcome.
Hi, I'm here. Yeah. Surprising everyone again.
I mean, not we decided like yesterday that was going to work. I mean, not everybody. We're just happy to have you here. What's going on?
Well, aside from literally everything blowing up in the last month, which is why nobody heard from me in a while, I started Muay Thai class. Yay!
Nice. Learning the combat arts.
Yes. So that way I can channel my frustrations appropriately.
Yeah. Learn how to throw elbows.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. That's cool. I've never taken a martial arts class, so I do not know like what the process of like getting started is. Like, do you go into like a beginner's class? Do you sit in a few kids' classes and just kind of work your way up through the level ones?
By fighting the kindergartners.
It's all a ladder. You got to start somewhere.
Right. No, so I spent a lot of time. I decided the way that I do. One day I just was like, hey, Dave, we should do Muay Thai. And Dave says, yeah, we should do Muay Thai. And I say, okay. So I start looking for places that have Muay Thai in my area. And I was looking through a whole bunch of them, doing a lot of research. And there was one that has an ajahn, which is like a higher rank than any of the other people in this area that are teaching. And he is teaching at an actual Buddhist temple and, you know, teaching the tradition and the culture as well as the actual art itself. And so that was exactly the kind of thing that Dave and I wanted, was something more like traditional, not like, you know, based on, ooh, you got to buy into this stuff and do the competition rounds and stuff like that. So we ended up going there. It's a bit of a drive, but... Ajahn is going to be offering us some extended classes on the weekends so that we can, you know, get our bang for our buck for having to drive as far as we do. Everything is cool. The interesting thing is that Dave took Kenpo previously and was on the path to becoming an instructor, but then dipped out because of, again, all of the, here you have to sell packages to people and you have to be all like focused on the competitions because that's how we make money for the school and this, that, and the other. Ugh. And that was not, you know, he was there for the love of the thing, not for all of this. Right. So he dipped out of that. But he has a lot of familiarity from Kenpo. It's a different form, but some things are really similar and other things are absolutely different. So the same thing I actually find to be true for me when it comes to Taibo, because y'all know, and listeners who haven't, you know, heard me mention this before, because it's been a minute since I mentioned it, I used to teach Taibo, which is a fitness art that basically popularized what would become cardio kickboxing. And it mixes Taekwondo and boxing, but all of the moves are adjusted so that you can chain them into basically infinite cardio combos. Mm-hmm. And so it was developed by Billy Blanks so that he could increase his cardio capacity and everything in his training. And that's how he used it. And then he's like, hey, I can bring this to other people. And then, you know, it became a craze for a while and then kind of died down. Mm-hmm. But I taught it for a long time. And although the actual classes that you know, I would teach and other people would teach were just like that fitness form that you would see on like all the Taibo videos. When we were actually at the certification boot camps, Billy taught it like it was a martial art. We had kata, we had pad work and gloves and hand wraps and all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we focused on getting into the proper forms for the different fighting stances and so on and so forth. So when I got to Muay Thai, I was really surprised to find out, guess what? All of this stuff really is, it's not 100% the same, but a lot of it is very similar to what I was doing before. So yeah. I'm having to adjust, like my hands want to go into boxer triangle rather than the Muay Thai hand position. And like my body wants to, you know, shift into the Taibo stance rather than the Muay Thai stance and things like that. But like I'm slowly working on fixing that. We can only go once a week because it's so far. But Dave and I have been trying to practice during the week when we have time. So we will see how things go moving forward. But we will be participating in a festival at the temple for the school's 20th anniversary coming up in November.
Nice.
And it's the Loi Krathong Festival, which is a Thai festival. And it'll be very cool.
Hmm.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
I have one more thing to add about that now that I think about it. So one time we were out there and we were doing some warm-up practice and drilling some stuff. And then one of the monks came by, and I don't know where this monk pulled it, but he pulled out of his saffron robes a cell phone and started to record us.
Oh, thank God. I thought that was going to go another direction.
No, yeah. And so he started to record us. And then, like, when he was done, the cell phone disappeared, and I don't know where it went to. So then I was, like, furiously Googling, trying to figure out where he stashed it, because they don't have pockets. Uh-huh. So I ended up, like, Googling around, and I found out that underwear is optional. They don't have to wear underwear under there. That has nothing to do with anything. I just found that out. Uh-huh. But in talking to other people, I found out that in the saffron robes, there's a certain part of the fabric, of the upper fabric, that folds in such a way that it kind of makes a pouch, and you can kind of stick stuff in there as if it was a pocket. Okay. So that's probably where that went to. And I'm like, okay, because I was like, I guess he's stuffing it in the belt or something. I don't know where else it's going. So
I've been playing too much Baldur's Gate because I immediately thought magic pockets. Just went to another party member.
Oh, man.
So anyway, that was just my whole giant, like, I'm here asking the important questions. Where did the monk put that phone? Yeah. Anyway, how's everybody else?
Ben, you have a fitness accomplishment.
Yeah. So I just got back from Portland literally like 2 hours before we started recording. I think I talked about this last week. I did a half marathon. So this was the first time I'd done that length before. I did it with one of my friends from elementary school. And so we finished in 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is like a pretty slow, it's not a breakneck pace or anything. It's like a 10 minute 30, 10 minute 40 type pace. But I was really happy with myself. I didn't stop at any point during it. We, you know, like jogged the entire way through. It was a lot of fun. It was the first time I've run that long. So yeah,
I will say, Ben, that you should never feel weird about having to stop or stopping, because
yes,
when you do, like, that helps you actually to run faster and further. So, don't feel weird about, ever stopping if you ever need to do so. But that is very cool. Congratulations.
I did go in with the mindset that I was going to listen to my body. So if my body started hurting, then I was going to stop. But I think just the adrenaline from the race and everything, and the little snackies that I got along the way, just carried me through.
It's super fun. I mean, especially if you've got like the right crowd going. I mean, depending upon the race, sometimes they have like bands and dancers, and all these people are cheering you, and it just gets real, real exciting, very fun.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to say to your body tomorrow when it's like, what the hell, man?
It has already been rebelling. I think I woke up like 4 or 5 times the night after the race, like just to drink more water, go to the bathroom, get more water, drink more water, go to bed.
What part of Portland did the course go through? Because like there is variability in the hills depending on which side you're on.
Yeah, the elevation wasn't too bad at all. There was only a few hills, but it wasn't that bad. It started downtown on the west side of the river, and went southward, crossed, and then came back up. Uh-huh. But yeah, overall, I forget the exact amount, but I think it was under like 200 feet elevation difference, like all the way through.
Yeah. Over that distance. Mild. Yeah.
The worst it got is at the mile 22 or whatever, 13.1 minus five is, at that point they had like the steepest hill that they had. And there were people who just had tables of beer out that were offering that to runners.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I imagine really nice. that hit of sugar and like a carbohydrate might actually be useful. Maybe.
Except that the alcohol is diuretic, but you know,
it's kind of hard. I think they were passing out Rainier, which is pretty close to water. So I think that was like how they tried to find a compromise. But
Well, I would definitely always run with a hydration pack, but especially like with where I live, I have to. Yeah. So like, you know, I like that because ideally you can just like sip on some water the whole time and not have to, you know, rely on the stops and get a little cup or whatever. You can just have your little sippy sip and move on down the road. If you need to, you can take salt pills or, you know, gels or whatever it is that you use for your fuel.
One of my favorite mini games is like trying to drink the water or Gatorade or whatever without stopping and then bidding it. So it usually just ends up in you splashing it on your face and then continuing on. But
that's another plus for the hydration pack because you have a little tube and you just have to bite like a bite valve and you just suck it up and move on down the road. You're good.
Yeah. And when you're not running an event, you can use it for everyday wear to hold Kahlua or something.
Well, yes. Indeed.
It sounds like we're all finding our bliss.
Well, congratulations. That rules. I know you've been preparing for that for a little bit.
Yeah, man. Super appreciate it. One side note, we went to Ground Control yesterday, and so I thought of you. The Lost World cabinet only had one gun. One was down, so I was very sad.
Yeah, that's too bad. I was going to make a crude joke about where that gun is, given how the Lost World cabinets are only used for fucking, you know, they got the curtain. That
either you or Gary broke it. So
no. Nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I had some distinctly non-healthy fun, I guess. It was a very good Chardonnay with dinner tonight and may have stepped on the gas pedal a little hard. So, if anything I say is more incoherent than normal, you'll know why.
Okay, well, thank you for the warning.
Dennis has the truth serum in him.
This is correct. Well, no, I've had a good week. It's beautiful out, so I've been spending way more time than not outdoors each day, and that's wonderful. This is like the trap time of year, so this is, PSA, where it feels amazing in the sun, but that sun will still burn the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
Do your sunscreen even if it's comfortable in the sun.
I was at my niece's tennis game, her last tennis game of the regular season, and I was sitting out, and boy, you could just feel it all up my right side from where the sun was. It was pretty raw. I don't think I got burned. It was just uncomfortable. But yes, that is a good PSA.
Mm-hmm. But happy fall.
Yeah. No, the nice weather got me to pull my old bike out and try and ride it. And my weight loss is to the point where I can like ride it. Okay.
Yay!
Which was sweet. Yeah. So worked my way up to about 3 miles, which is basically nothing on a bike, but still something, you know? So yeah, I don't know.
Greater than zero is always good.
I was going to say, anything is better than nothing. So.
Yes, greater than zero is good. So enjoying the outdoors in addition to going and doing some walking hikes. Just basically, I learn about a new path. I'm like, oh well, I guess I'm just going to go there. Cool.
Walk that shit. Got 100% this area.
Yeah. I get bored so easily. So like I did a paved path yesterday, which was only saved by the fact that it went around a big lake, which was good. I tend to prefer the woods paths as they were. This wasn't this past weekend, but the weekend before, I did 5 miles in the woods with like a 550 elevation.
Are you listening to something while you walk, or are you just walking with the sounds?
Oh, I'm just out there paying attention, listening for deer and squirrels and stuff. Yeah.
Nice.
So
nice.
Yep. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's what's going on. Just enjoying a little bit of the good weather here. Nice. I think that we should talk about video games. That's probably going to be a good time, I think. And we ought to get started with the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you.
Yeah, so folks don't have to be scared. I don't have a whole lot to talk about because everything's been blowing up. I only have a couple of things to talk about today, one of which is very short. So... first thing is Simulacra 3. This is the third game in the Simulacra series, which I have been reporting in about at random whenever I play them on this show. So Simulacra 3 is a found phone murder, mystery, and horror game developed by Kygon Games and published by Neon Doctrine in 2022 for mobile and Steam. And I bought it. I don't know if I bought it in 2022 or earlier this year. It's been on my phone for a long time, and I only just got to it as backlog accumulates. However, I did finally get to play it. So the dev description from the Steam page for this is, the once charming town of Stone Creek has seen better days. People are vanishing into thin air, leaving nothing behind but strange symbols where they were last seen. With the police baffled and the populace terrified, rumors swirl that it is the doing of the Beldam, the ghost of a witch that once haunted the streets of Stone Creek. You are the intern at a local paper tasked with assisting the town's star journalist, Ruby Myers, on her investigation into the disappearances. Your only lead is the phone of the missing Paul Castillo, a software developer and amateur historian of the town, one of Ruby's sources. While Ruby does the legwork, your job is to hack into Paul's phone for any clues left behind. New apps, exciting features, and fresh terror await those who delve into the darkest corners of the digital realms as you investigate the Beldam of Stone Creek. So, this story follows your investigation with Ruby unlocking what happened to some of these missing people, in particular, of course, Paul, but also a man named Jeff, who was Paul's coworker, and that just kind of starts unraveling a bunch of different stuff, different leads that you are investigating as you go. And this title is actually the least horror of any of the games in this IP. It's not really as scary as some of the other installments, particularly, I would say, one, because one was the first one in the series like this, but two also had new ways that it was creepy. So this one, though, it's not really creepy. It's more of a murder mystery with like some supernatural stuff going on. But it does have new mechanics, which is cool because the first three games have very similar mechanics, mostly dealing with talking back and forth with people via chat and selecting responses, digging around in different apps, social apps and stuff of whoever's phone you happen to have, trying to find clues in their email and their web browsers and everything, and, you know, advancing the plot that way. But this one includes a map where you can unlock new locations by solving some puzzles using information that you gather during your investigation, and kind of like a location-based Twitter analog where people are like commenting on different. It's kind of like a Facebook or a Twitter for like a spot. So like it's all tied to each of those locations.
Have we forgotten Foursquare so soon?
Yeah, I was going to say that sounds a lot like Foursquare.
I never engaged with Foursquare, so okay.
I guarantee you half this audience is hearing of Foursquare for the first time right now.
So yeah, or I guess you could also say it's kind of like a Nextdoor as well.
How much racism is there?
So anyway, there's also a neat mechanic involving security systems, security cameras, and trying to help somebody escape a thing. So that's a pretty cool section of the game, but I don't want to delve too more far into that because that will be spoiler territory. Mm-hmm. However, I will be doing an episode about this as an IP, Simulacra as an IP. That episode will be coming out around Halloween on Jolachan's Place. So, but anyway, the theming on this one veers off the thesis of the other games a good deal, and it's much more loosely tied, it's kind of a footnote, you know, that the way that it ties into the other ones. So,
yeah, I was going to ask how in continuity it was.
It's not really. A lot of people gave it like really negative scores, but I think it's because they really just were wanting more of what the first two games were doing. Mm-hmm. And this one is just something different. And whenever you do anything different, people are going to fuss. So this one, I don't think that it's a bad game, but I don't think it's quite as memorable or impactful, thematically speaking, as one or two, or even the freeware Pipe Dreams interquel that they did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really like that Pipe Dreams interquel. I think that, of the three that you had played at the time, it seemed like that was your favorite.
Well, it was mostly because that one was very funny. Yeah. It was very funny and poking fun at basically the way that mobile games had evolved into just being shovelware and, you know, freemium and stuff like that. And it was making fun of that real hardcore. And I appreciated that very much. Yeah. So...
So you said it a couple times in the description, a beldam or something like that. Is that an official term or is that the game's term?
I don't know
what
that's
a beldam.
A beldam, I don't know what that means. I'm sure that's some kind of actual title or something. But I don't know. It might be something.
Oh. I found it. It's an archaic term for an old woman.
There you go.
A malicious.
Well, also remember too that this is like a Malaysian dev, so like they're gonna just be using whatever word, you know, strikes them. I think it's not that the English is bad or anything, but like they might be using some words that maybe an American developer wouldn't be using. So
yeah, some archaic words,
indeed. So
does it take place in Malaysia?
No, it's in a fictional place called Stone Creek.
Okay. So, that's you did say that. I was wondering.
It's fine. Yeah. Well, words they just happen and then they go out the ear. I don't know. Yeah. So it's fine. But So any other questions about Simulacra 3?
How much FMV are we talking about?
A fair amount. I won't say that it's so much. There is more. I feel like there's more FMV in this one than there was in the prior ones. Like they're trying to get away from having so much heavy emphasis on the chat feature and having the, you know, like replying back and forth with your NPCs via chat and waiting for their replies to come through and picking stuff. I mean, they're trying to get away from like the visual novel style thing and lean a little bit more into the video aspect. So, So yeah, I think that there is more video in this one than there would be in the other ones, but it still relies on a lot of time of you just like poking around on this phone and looking through the apps and looking through the emails and, you know, contacting people via chat or phone call or whatever. Mm-hmm. So
I'm playing Simulacrum and I didn't know it.
Indeed. So yeah, the other thing that I have been playing is Dishonored 2. It's a replay,
hell
of course.
Yeah.
Still a really fun game, y'all. And I still remember so many details about this game. And I realize that the reason why is because of the way that I played it the first time I played it. I was chatting with a listener on Steam and was asked whether I was still making one massive pile of bodies per level. And the answer is no, I'm not. When I did that the first time around, I dragged literally every single carcass or unconscious person to one spot in the level. And it added so much time to my game. But
as one imagines it would.
Yeah, but I also was just like, you know, combing the level for everything I could find and reading everything and just like really absorbing it. Because, you know, I love exploration and these games are like highly rewarding exploration. So, you know.
Especially if they reward more bodies to pile.
Yeah. Well, and then I also was specifically hunting down every single living thing in every level. the first time around and like taking down every single thing that I could.
I like to imagine the unconscious people in the body pile waking up and then to that horror.
Unfortunately for the people at the bottom, they may or may not make it depending upon if they were already dead when they got down there. So the answer is I am making several small piles and I'm not taking every single person out. I am taking extra people that I don't really need to take out, but like I'm not taking every single person. I am actually skipping some parts and not, you know, combing every single room of every single, you know, corner or whatever. But I just finished Attermire. So the next mission is my former favorite, the Clockwork Mansion. I say former because I do not know. I don't want to call that until I've replayed everything.
Right, right.
But like it was definitely my favorite in the first time that I was playing through these.
Maybe cracking the slab will hit you different this time.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Are you running Corvo or are you running, Emily? Is that the name?
Emily.
Yeah.
I am running Emily because I'm playing this and the original back to back. And then after this is Death of the Outsider. I've played a lot of Corvo already because of Dishonored 1. So that I just finished. So, you know, I was like, okay, I'm ready for different powers and stuff now. I'm gonna play. Plus, I also feel that Emily is the more rewarding path to take in the second game. And also doing it low chaos as well, you know, has the most story-rich kind of environment.
Yeah. So. Nice. God, I love that game. It's so good.
It's fantastic.
You should really
check out what they've done recently. I hear they've done some really good stuff. You won't be let down.
I mean,
very good, Dennis.
I was going to ask, just like based on the news, I was going to ask how you felt about Dishonored 3 being in the Microsoft leaks, but there is nothing to know and therefore nothing to base your opinion on other than I'm in favor of more Dishonored.
Right.
So,
right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, it is good to hear that you're still having fun with it. Bodies of pile being small, piles of body being small or large.
Yeah. What's everybody
bodies
else playing?
Of pile.
Yeah, bodies of pile. That's
we
great.
All collectively write that down.
I know. I was like, let's write that down actually now that you reiterated it and everything.
I imagine I'm not the only person here who was kind of sleepy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go because I have two new ones, relatively new. Nice. Have not completed either of these for as short as they are, but I do have stuff to say. The first of these is going to be that I started playing the Separate Ways DLC for Resident Evil 4.
I want to play it. I can't get to it. I have no time. Yeah.
No, I'm streaming it, and it's neat. You're playing as Ada, just like in the Separate Ways. You know, stuff that was added to Resident Evil 4 for the PS2 and Wii version. It is her storyline that is kind of going parallel to Leon's, kind of showing what happens before and after those few points where she kind of pops in. The problem with the original Separate Ways was that it was very slight, didn't add an awful lot new, and the stuff that it added in new was actually pretty bad. Not a big fan of the original Separate Ways. Ben, as the person who has played the most RE4 here, what's your opinion on OG Separate Ways?
I liked it.
Oh, okay. All right. even the Saddler fight?
I can't remember it. So I either blocked it out or it was unremarkable. So that's not great.
Yeah. So this is cool. There are two things that it kind of emphasizes. Let's say three. The first is that it is more stealth based, where you are in familiar locations, but you're not necessarily barging in like Leon the Himbo will. So you end up getting more of a drop on characters, and just you can, you know, kind of chain stealth kills in a really satisfying way. Which is nice. The second thing is Ada for some reason has a cyber eye. She has like shadow run augmentation in her eye, which lets her do some like dumb detective vision stuff, but also lets her spot grapple points for her little grappling hook. And there is there's some good boss content that uses that, but also it is a way to get around levels quicker. You know, even like, I don't know, like make non-combat escapes. Like you do not have to fight and kill everybody, which is welcome. Feels a little bit more in line with Ada's overall style as the secret agent. Jala?
Hey, Cole, would you say that Ada has enhanced eyes?
Yes. Did we discover that that's what it's actually called when Corvo uses it?
Oh no, it's not. Remember, I was well actually. Yes.
Oh yeah,
it's like or Hots dies or something like that. Like somebody pulled that audio and then enhanced it and slowed it down so you could hear what they actually are saying.
That sounds like it's been made up.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does have at least one enhanced eye, which is a little weird. The presence of Wesker in this is disconcerting because it really feels like they're aiming us toward RE5 as the next remake, which I'm not crazy for. I'm a Code Veronica partisan.
As I was gonna say, it can't get worse, probably.
So. True. Yeah. Maybe they'll make it better. I just don't know how. You'd have to do a lot, even just with theming and it's not shitty British Wesker, so the idea that like as time goes on and as Wesker gets more evil, he gets more British in his affect. Now he just sounds like the frat guy villain of an 80s teen comedy.
Nice.
And the cool thing, and the thing that I didn't expect, which feels like a wild decision for them to make that is for like five people, is that this incorporates some concepts from the scrapped early version of Resident Evil 4, also known as the castle version, where Leon was going to be in a legit haunted medieval castle where ghosts were tormenting him with visions. minor spoilers, but Ada, you start out at the castle, and Sadler's right hand guy is I want to say the Verdugos, but that might be vegetables in Spanish. the one that follows her around, as opposed to the one that follows Leon around, nicks her with one of these little bio spike things, and she is infected with something that makes her like super susceptible to his psionic attacks. So this thing is pursuing you and pops up at times. And when you're fighting, you kind of go into a realm where this thing is like putting out all these decoys and stuff. This is something that was not present at all in the original Separate Ways. So I imagine part of the plot line is going to be her trying to find an antidote for this, so she's not tormented by bug ghosts for the rest of her life. But it was fucking wild that they dug these like stuff that echoes these scrapped concepts back out and decided to reincorporate them. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. So I haven't finished it yet, but like I'm pretty happy with it. I'm also pretty happy to get more Luis content. Because Luis rules, so that's good.
How much is the DLC?
Oh, it's like $10.
Oh my god!
$10 for like 6 hours is what Howl on the Beat says. So yeah. I've got two more sessions on it, but yeah.
Well, that's awesome that they're not just doing like a gloss over or something like that, and just quickly putting it out and actually taking time to craft it well.
Yeah, it feels very well considered. I imagine it was benefited. It benefited from them having planned for it from the beginning, as opposed to, I think, the RE8 DLC, which took a very long time, A, because of COVID, and B, because I don't know that they expected it to necessarily warrant or for there to be demand for it. Felt like it was kind of ready to go. Yeah. Any questions about RE4 Separate Ways?
Nope, I will play it someday.
Yeah. The other thing I've played like the first couple hours of a new game called Cocoon. Okay. Ben's breath catches. This is the new game by the gameplay director of Limbo and Inside. And it is really cool. It's on Game Pass. If you swing that way.
How far are you into this game?
I just activated the second sphere.
Okay.
By which I mean I beat the boss in the second sphere.
Okay. I'm going to have to not listen to some of this because I just started this game, spoiler alert, from what okay. I have.
Okay.
I'm
not going to do too much. I imagine they're like for everybody's sake, also because I have not played an awful lot of this, but I just going to get you the initial impression of it here. You play as like a little like cicada person, it looks like, in a very brightly colored but still lonely and melancholy world. Made up of various wilds and also strange machinery. This is a top-down-ish puzzle game, is what it is, like action adventure puzzle kind of thing, where your interaction is very simple. You can pick stuff up and you can put it down. And initially, you're solving very basic puzzles, you know, trying to discern what this machinery does, looking for symbols to input codes, things like that. But then you reach a little pad and your character just kind of like flies up and then flies into the screen. And it turns out that entire world that you have been going around in is in fact contained in this little colored orb. Huh. And this orb can be used to A, power different machines, and B, once you beat the boss that inside of it, the orb will have different effects that will kind of be active as you are carrying it around. And also a completed orb can be taken into another orb to be used in there. And suddenly you get all kinds of recursion where you are solving puzzles based on getting to a certain point in one world, figuring out a way to jump out of it, and carry and shuttle these things around, to get in to solve a roadblock and then get back in, with whatever you need and solve a puzzle in the other world. So it seems like something that is going to very quickly get out of hand, but it feels very ingenious to me. And definitely a lot more mechanically interesting to me than Limbo and Inside, both of which are fantastic games in their own right, but definitely kind of harken more to like out of this world, another world, cinematic platformer kind of things. This feels a little bit more in line with like almost like Zelda Oops All Puzzles, but with some just like real like Mist or Scorn, like what does this machine do kind of stuff thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a very pretty game. Everything is kind of rendered in this low detail, kind of gradient shaded kind of look. It is very heavy in atmosphere. There is no, at least as far as I have found, there is no dialogue. No written word in this aside from the menus. You have to, kind of witness, like discern what everything does by the sequence of, the way that they introduce these concepts and then iterate on them and kind of demonstrate them within the world, which feels like very good design. And it's one of those things where like, I don't know, this seems real good to me. And I think that, you know, maybe this gameplay designer was being held back from some of their kind of more ambitious ideas by the kind of presentational side of things, you know, especially when you compare this to something like, what was that other one for that X Limbo and Inside people did? Sunnyvale?
Yeah, Sunnyvale.
Yeah, yeah. Which was itself more in line with another world kind of stuff.
That one was maybe presentation similar to like Limbo and Inside, but kind of fell flat with art style a little bit and mechanically heavily. So
yeah, Somerville, Sunnyvale, I think is a town outside of San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's neat. I want to play more of it just because I get like it took a little bit for the puzzles to not feel simplistic. Oh, also there are boss fights in this, which are real cool. It's not a combat game. There is no other combat, but each boss fight is a puzzle that you have to solve while this thing is trying to kill you, which I was real surprised at. Yeah. But it works very well.
Finally, some stakes around a puzzle game.
Yeah. it's good. I think that it is super charming. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. What drew your eye to it, Ben? Aside from the fact that has personnel overlap with Inside.
Yeah, I read an article that said like lead designer from Limbo and Inside, so I was at the Steam checkout within a minute of that. So
yeah, I'm not seeing a lot of like chatter or hype around this. Yeah. Which is weird because it's Annapurna published. Like usually that would get some cachet.
They know what they're doing, so yeah. It's surprising.
Yeah. So I don't know. Looking forward to playing more. Any questions about it?
No, but well,
sounds cool.
Why don't we transition to me then?
Yes, let's transition to Ben.
So this is what I also played, but I've only played a tiny, tiny bit of it. I think I've only gotten to the first like upgrade that you get, and. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly just been exploring and seeing like the intro puzzles. But yeah, from the get, it seems like this is much more mechanically driven than art style driven. Mm-hmm. Not to belittle the art style of it or anything. It's just not as forward with that as something like Inside and Limbo is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, what I see so far, I like. I have also gotten to the like outside the world that you're in part. And I'm exploring that part, but yeah, I was worried at first because a couple of times, like as you're progressing through the intro stuff, like gates will come up behind you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh no, I wanted to explore that. But it becomes apparent pretty early on that there's ways to undo those and kind of explore more of the environment.
Yeah.
And you're not like permanently shut off from them. So that's good. But yeah, this is definitely my jammy jam. So I think I will talk about this game in full probably next week.
Nice.
So yeah, other than that, I don't really have too much to add to it.
At which point I will be an hour in and need everyone to keep things spoiler
free. Right. Sure, sure.
Combo along.
I think we had a chart one time of like the viral spread of games to one another on the podcast. That's what I'm thinking of right now.
That hasn't been updated in 200 episodes.
Yeah, probably be a little rough.
We'll have to find the level librarian to update that, I guess. Anyway, the other one I was going to talk about is Baldur's Gate. I've still been playing that, but I have not progressed too far beyond the third region. I'm pretty much where I was last week since I was gone 5 of the 7 weeks, or mm-hmm. 5 of the 7 days this past week. But that game is still awesome, so no complaints there.
Any cool anecdotes?
No, not really. I haven't decided what I want to do for my next class yet. Still, I think I'm going to probably do something like a charisma build so I can still be the persuader and then just do magic on top of that. But I do want to do a science run through at some point since I would like to kind of tinker around with that. So I'll either respec Gale and just enjoy it that way, or I'll just do a run through with that myself.
Mm-hmm. What is a science run through?
Oh, sorry. Intelligence run through. My bad.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Intelligence/wizard, because I think wizard's the only class that cares about intelligence, and so
yeah, that tracks. Yeah, intelligence will work for some other skills or whatever, but I think that's the only one where it's operative.
Yeah,
it seems to be a dump stat for an awful lot of enemies, and I'm frustrated because I can't find a good spell that targets int saves.
Hmm.
Targets who?
Anyone's got recommendations?
Targets people to save against int.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. No recommendations for you.
Gonna have to go brew something up, Dennis.
Yeah.
To the wikis.
If you respect Gale to focus on intelligence, I'm trying to think if there are any items in the game, any helms in the game that have the character wearing glasses.
Is that a Fallout callback?
Complete the ensemble. No, apropos nothing. Although it is kind of funny that, I mean, you know, medieval fantasy, yada yada, but you never see people with glasses in these settings.
No, I mean, usually a gnome tinker.
Okay, yeah. Well, the goggles are different than glasses, though, right?
Yeah.
I guess glasses are just very tiny gargles.
So. Maybe.
Gargles?
Goggles. Did I mention I drank a lot of wine tonight?
Can you feel your face?
I can. Too much.
Okay.
Too much.
It is very warm.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. Well, I don't have anything more to say or ask about Baldur's Gate. I think that we've talked about it quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Spoiler alert. I'm probably going to have these same two games next week as well. So.
I was going to say, you are very lucky that I've been playing something else then.
Dennis, since you teased us there, what you got?
Nope. Going to talk more about Baldur's Gate first.
Okay.
I'm still having fun with Baldur's Gate. It is a very good game. For another classic, Furia classic here, the new campaign for Trackmania is out.
Okay.
So came out on the first of the month, and it is a banger. So two campaigns ago was just straight up bad. Last campaign was pretty good. This one might be my favorite campaign of all time. Ooh. Just 25 tracks, and there is not a dud among them. Really, really good. And people were kind of complaining before this season launched that they weren't introducing any new blocks, like track-making pieces, with this season. And that it doesn't always happen, but it usually happens that there's one or two or more new pieces to build with. And man, if they can churn out this quality of track by not focusing on adding new things... you don't ever have to make a new block again. These maps are awesome. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, check out Trackmania. It's free to play. It is extremely good. I don't want to know how many hours I have in the game at this point, but there will be many more judging by the quality of this campaign.
Nice.
So for somebody pretty unfamiliar with the game, is there a way to quantify like what makes a good map on Trackmania?
Oh, man. Yes, I'm trying to think of a way to put it to someone that's not like intimately familiar with the workings of the game. I think basically it's a map that has fun ideas while still rewarding skill.
Okay.
Like you can make a map that rewards skill, but it's just a bunch of technical turns slapped together. And it's like, okay, well, you know, this feels like it was randomly generated, and there's nothing wrong with it. And it takes a lot of skill to get through, but like there's, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it has any inspiration. And then there are maps that have very fun ideas, but it's all kind of janky or makes it so that's kind of a crapshoot how fast you're going. It's like, oh, well, you know, you kind of just have to send it off this jump and close your eyes and hope you land perfectly. And,
gotcha.
You know, that makes or breaks your run. And so something that is high skill or rewards mastery, I would say, and plus, you know, does something creative in a place or two.
Okay.
Is really fun. So yeah, and I think a lot of the tracks that I've played in this campaign, you know, do stuff like that.
I'm comparing it to a mini golf course in my head where it's like windmill randomness bad, but like pipes that shoot in the right way good.
No, that is a very apt comparison. Trackmania is the mini golf of racing games. I love it. That is 100% true. 100% true. But yeah, so new stuff for that. Check it out. But the new game I've been playing, assuming no one has questions for those other ones, is a game that just released today as of recording. So the third. I am playing the Lamplighters League.
Oh, shit. That's out?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man.
And it's been posted on Game Pass forever as like a coming soon and finally released today.
Yeah, new game by Harebrained Schemes, the people who did BattleTech, and importantly for me, the Shadowrun RPGs, Shadowrun Returns series.
I think in their launcher, it looks like there's Crusader Kings 3, so I don't know if that's the same people.
No, I don't think that is.
Yeah. I don't know where that image came from in their launcher then, but go figure. Anyway, yes, the Lamplighters League, it is... a turn-based strategy game. It operates on a grid, and so all the XCOM stuff applies, right? This is in my wheelhouse. of, you know, you can move or shoot in your turn. You get two action points, so you can shoot twice and not move, or do one of each, or, you know, whatever. And each different character has different abilities. And, you know, you have your characters all take a turn and then hang on to your butt as the enemy takes a turn and tries to kill you. And you go back and forth over either, you know, just clearing the area or accomplishing some objective or what have you. What really sells Lamplighters League is the theming. So this is like 1930s, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen style setting.
It's like pulp serial globetrotting kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Indiana Jones, eat your heart out. And the idea is that, you know, the Lamplighters League is this secretive organization that kind of is the good guys on the world of the occult and arcane. That is down to one final member. Everyone else has been wiped out, and a trio of villains are leading their organizations to try to kind of take over the source of all magic in the world. And so since they don't have the best of the best anymore, they have to pull in the best of the worst. And the Lamplighters League pulls in all of these kind of scoundrels, thieves, ruffians to help them. And as you can imagine, initially they're just there for the paycheck, and then they start to warm up and like, oh, magic is real. What? And then they're off to the races and finding that they care and all this stuff. So very charming story and makes for a very charming setting, an excuse to have people done up in all kinds of fun adventuring gear that you might not otherwise see.
Mm-hmm. So are you rolling with like a fixed party, like in a Shadowrun, where you've got like a home base and you're talking with people and you're picking your loadout for an individual mission based on what you're expecting?
Yes, kind of. So, you know, in the early game, and I'm still in the early game, there are missions to recruit new members, I guess, of the Lamplighter League. So other people, the guy kind of heading everything up is like, hey, I've heard about this person here who seems to have occult powers. Let's go recruit them and stuff like that. And that adds new people to your roster. And so, yeah, so on a given mission, you might choose who you want to use based on the type of mission. For me, at least, though, it feels like you kind of find a play style or a combo of people that you like. There are three broad classes. Let's see if I can remember. There are sneaks, bruisers, and saboteurs are the three different classes that everyone kind of broadly fits into. And so, you know, each one can do something that the others can't. So, you know, a bruiser can like knock down walls, and saboteurs can pick locks. And so I think this will be a game where you kind of find your favorite from each of those classes and then roll with them.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. You know, there's a large skill tree for each person, and the move sets feel very different, even within a class. So everyone has different weapons and abilities, so that that keeps things interesting. And so I haven't settled on what my party comp is yet, mostly because, you know, the party choices keep on expanding.
It's early, so you've not mm-hmm. like set up an A team and a B team. You're still feeling it out.
I started with two, recruited a third, and then also got like an auxiliary person, so they don't come on missions but they help.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the pilot that flies you out. And then recruited a fourth, and they were like, hey, now that you've got four people, you can send a team of three on one mission and then put the extra people on other missions, like kind of not combat missions, but high level macro lair stuff you can assign them to.
Yeah.
But I'm burying the lead. The thing that is most different or interesting about Lamplighter League's take on this genre is that for the first part of every mission, and in fact, anytime you clear an area and you're kind of out of view of any other bad guys, it switches over to a real-time stealth game.
Okay.
So you're running around all the same levels, and you've still got your party, but you're moving them moment to moment as patrols of guards walk around. And each character has a special set of moves that they can use only when they're in this stealth mode. Okay. And you know, you can broadly see the cones of vision and all that. And basically those special moves are ways to take out guards without having to enter combat. Okay. They all carry some risk. Either you have to get in very close or you're going to make some noise or what have you. And so it's this game of chicken of like, how far can I push in? How many guards can I take out before I inevitably kind of trip the alarm? At which point you start your turn-based combat.
And so are the classes balanced? So it's like sneak's really good during this mode, but then not as effective during the combat mode?
Surprisingly, it's the opposite. Hmm. And this might just be what I've played so far. The bruisers, like out of combat mode or their stealth mode move, it's like rushdown or something. And you basically like charge straight in a line, but can take out up to three people if you can line them all up. Mm-hmm. And it's got a pretty good length to it. So that's hyper useful because oftentimes guards are patrolling in pairs or you know, patrolling in a pair that goes past a stationary guard or what have you. So that's just super useful. The sneak, all the people's vision areas are cut in half and only face one direction. Mm. And so it's much easier to get around the level. But when it comes to actually taking them out, you need to get up and melee with them behind them and take them out that way one at a time. And there's enough guards that have high alertness. So if someone's stationed at a post, they don't move and they're more aware of what's around them. Mm-hmm. And that's harder for the sneak to get up on. So there's just enough people that are kind of already looking out for someone that the sneak has limited utility on that front. What's interesting, though, and this is a little bit fiction breaking, sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't, is that you have a limited number of uses for each of your stealth mode abilities. Mm-hmm. So you can only do two rushdowns, you can only do three backstabs before you're out, and you have to go into turn-based combat if you want to take anyone else out. And they talk about the idea of, like, you know, you're going to have to go loud at some point, and this mm-hmm. enforces that. But it's really weird that your knife can run out of uses.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's just like Resident Evil 4 remake. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that, and, like, in, you know, a bull rush from the bruiser, knocking people over never goes out of style. Like, I don't know why that's limited.
What if your shoulders sore?
I guess. Then why can you shoot so good? Maybe the bruiser doesn't shoot. It's straight up a melee class. But
yeah.
Maybe you have to, like, resharpen your knife, you know? Like, you don't want to, like, give them a terrible wound when you're stabbing them with it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You want it to be quiet, right? Quick and quiet.
Yeah, you want a clean slice.
You got to resharpen that shoulder.
During these real-time sections, are you controlling one person at a time? Are, like, the others following behind you? Or are you, like, hopping around and getting everybody into position? Like,
yeah.
That's real-time stealth seems awkward when you are, you know, controlling a team. Right.
Yeah. If I had to complain about something, other than the installation of the game, which I'll come around to at some point, but yeah, it's that. So when you know who you want to be using in real time, it's great because you keep everyone grouped, and only the person that you are directly controlling counts towards tripping vision cones. Everyone else mm-hmm. follows you pretty closely, but, like, if the computer controlled one following you accidentally traipses in front of a soldier, it's not going to ruin your run because of the AI.
Okay, it's like Last of Us rules.
Exactly, like the Last of Us rules. Very, very generous on that front. You only have to worry about yourself. But more often than not, there's situations where it's like, oh, well, I could use this person to do a takedown at the same time as I move this person closer. Excuse me. And so you ungroup them and you can swap around and control each of them individually. But that's very, very dangerous because it's so easy for someone to get stuck out when there are roving patrols of guards.
So when you ungroup, are either person, like, able to trip the combat?
Yeah, the second you ungroup, everyone becomes viewable. And there's okay. some forgiveness for, you know, you can kind of be on the edge of someone's sight line and then back out real quick and they'll only kind of look over there and do the traditional, you know, guards,
mm-hmm.
and not do anything. So you can get out of it. But I've had some really weird situations where I ungrouped and switched and then everyone shifted around me because of the switch was weird. And suddenly everyone is standing out in the open. Like, oh, crap. And then, like, instead of regrouping like a smart person, I am like an idiot swapping rapidly between everyone, trying to get them to run away a little bit at a time. And so, you know, it is, you know, one consciousness jumping between these bodies, getting them to move. And then they just you know, stand still in the open when I'm not on them. So some kind of like get to cover button would probably be helpful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you swap, just put the person that you swapped to in the exact location your current person is. Now, the reason they're not is because at any moment you can choose to go into turn-based mode and it drops you into a grid. And so I understand that you can't have them directly on top of each other, but it does make for some awkward moments. Go ahead.
I was going to change subjects, but I was curious about the RPG aspect of this game.
Mm-hmm. You can collect things in level. So supplies, intel, and skill points that you can then spend out of level to get better equipment. And then with skill points, you can level up different skills. And there's pretty good variety of different verbs you can give your characters. I think I haven't seen a skill that can be upgraded itself more than twice. And then everything else is just new things you can do. You can spend any amount of skill points on any character. And even in the tutorial, it's like you can spread these out to everyone or you can drop them all onto one character. The choice is yours. And that's kind of fun. So I definitely, you know, reading through skill trees was like, ooh, that seems like it would be broken. So, you know, drop more points on that character to get that skill that's further down.
Okay.
Every time you buy a new skill, it gives your character a little bit more max HP and a little bit more damage. There definitely is some kind of ongoing progression.
And I assume like the skills are like higher cost the further down the tree you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. It starts out at one, then it's two, then it's four, etc. So really, really interesting idea, cool setting, and the moment-to-moment gameplay has been great. I'm playing on the normal difficulty, and it feels impossible to do a mission perfectly, right?
Yeah.
In XCOM, generally, it's like, man, you're either perfect or you're dead, and there's no in-between. Lamplighters League thrives on the in-between, where it's like, okay, I'm going to take some chip damage. It's okay. There's not penalties for that at the end of the level.
Yeah.
And it's more about like making the valuation of, is this better positioning for my offensive move worth the fact that it means I will probably get hit in return?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or there's a higher chance, or, you know, can I afford to take more damage? You can actually find healing items in the level, and that plays out really interesting in combat. Generally, you're trying to pick those up when you're walking around in the free roam mode. But in combat, sometimes it's like, I need to get to a health pack. And suddenly you're kind of running away across the level. But it's been really nice to have a game that has a give and take of feeling like damage is a resource that you can spend, instead of it's an instant death sentence.
Yeah. Or, I mean, something you're going to be paying for over the course of several missions is that person's benched.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. I do have to do a brief rant about just everything has a launcher. Everything has a sign in. Everything has an account.
Yeah. I figured out why Crusader Kings was on there. It's using the Paradox launcher.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Well, screw that launcher. Stop pretending like you're something you're not. Like, it was so frustrating because at first I was like, I think I have an account for this, especially because I played Crusader Kings at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't get that to activate. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe I can make a new one. And then it was giving me like network errors on their side because I think everyone was starting to play it at once.
Right.
And that's the other thing. I did the pre-install yesterday. And I forget, it was like a 30 gigabyte game or something. And then
that's
there was a 16 gigabyte download or update at launch, 5 minutes after the game became available. So it's like, God, like why did you have me pre-download, and why didn't you have me pre-download this patch? I don't understand.
Mm.
So, excuse me. After derping around with the account and finally seeing like, all the way at the top right, there's a tiny little hidden button saying you can skip signing in. Finally got to the game, but I was this close to not even playing it.
Yeah, that's irritating.
The game is fun.
Yeah.
So it's, Can we not do that? Can we not put everything on a launcher with its own sign in, please?
Man, Baldur's Gates has it. It's rough.
Yeah, Cocoon doesn't Larian have does it. Not True. Need a launcher.
Yeah, not a fan. But Dennis, what if you want to earn reward points?
I know. I would like the reward of not spending 10 minutes trying to figure out my password.
Yeah, yeah. You have to eat wrong password, reset. Can't use a password that's the same as your old password. Doing that dance. Yeah.
Yup.
Baldur's Gate do that for PC? I don't remember doing that for the PS5, but it might be because it's already linked to your PlayStation account.
Yeah, it does it for the PC. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But don't let that overshadow what is a really fun and creative game. And I've said before that, like, I hate trying new turn-based games because I always wind up just wishing it was XCOM.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't kicked in yet. Cool. So we'll see if that lasts.
How many hours do you have in the game so far?
I probably played like 3 hours before we recorded.
Okay.
So, I mean, I got a good number of missions in. I feel like these games are always a very long rollout of systems.
Yeah.
So I'm still having new systems introduced, but that's kind of the game.
What's like the world map situation that I'm seeing in some of the images?
It's been nothing complicated so far. It's just when it comes time to choose your next mission, it pulls up this very stylized map of the world. And, you can pick one of several options. And whatever one you don't choose, you don't get to do. So sometimes it's like, hey, you can recruit this person or that person, but not both.
Okay. So it's kind of like the events in XCOM.
A little bit, yeah. It's unlike XCOM in that I haven't seen there be any cost to traveling further.
Okay.
So, like, you know, it's not, you know, Russia is not further away than South America.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah. it's all the same. It's just stylistic.
Okay.
But yeah, good turn-based strategy times.
I completely forgot this game was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good to me.
Snuck up on me, but I'm glad I found it.
Yeah. Anything else, Dennis?
Those are my games.
That's a segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, we were playing some word games on the Slack, and it just got silly enough that I was like, all right, we got to do this as a multiplayer. So what we're going to do is we're going to change one letter of a game's title to create an entirely new game. So what game are you making? Simple as that.
Yeah. And Sean begins with Bark Souls. As a legendary canine knight, it is your job to hunt and defeat twisted, hideous feline monstrosities that have invaded the kennels of Berkshire. Yeah. Woot. It just reminds
not
me.
Not gonna lie, I would play that.
One of the dumbest WoF sketches we did was Eternal Darkness, but we made it Eternal Barkness.
it's right there. Every time Dark shows up, it's right there.
Yeah, it is the easiest way to go. Jala, what does Callum say?
Callum says Mortal Wombat, probably a gore-filled platformer with Australian animals.
Mm-hmm.
Wombats, this might be hearsay, but I've heard that wombats are just assholes, so it kind of fits.
Yeah, wombats poop cubes.
I didn't know that, but I do follow wombats on Instagram, like Wombat Rescues, and they're actually pretty cute, and they scratch their booty on like barbed wire.
Nice.
They are hardcore. Cute, but they are jerks.
Yeah.
let's see. Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, follow knight. A knight who returns to his kingdom, a broken and twisted soul, he can only follow his nose to find his true destiny, which is to save his kingdom from a terrible curse and collect the magic fruit loops at the end. I get it now.
Oh, there we go, yeah. Oh, Toucan Sam. Toucans weird me out. You ever see them?
Have you ever seen their smaller cousins, the Akari? They have like serrated beaks and they're, yeah.
No, thank you. No, thank you one bit. Dennis, what does Dave say?
Dave says, Elden Sing, the idle sim of the lands between, with all the lords as the judges.
Be pretty hard to beat Ronnie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's hard to beat Ronnie anyway. yeah. Phil says, open world winter sports game that takes place on assorted planets called No Man's Ski.
Yes.
Yeah. Really disappointing at first, but then they get their act together.
We even had a joke called No Man's Ski earlier.
Yeah, I was just saying, leans even harder into the last name bit.
Let's see, Jala, what does Case say?
Case says, just pause. It's still almost identical to Just Cause, but Rico has a time stopwatch instead of a grappling hook.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Nice.
Good yeah. work. Dennis,
wait, this is just Zelda.
Ah, man. Dennis, what does Random Sum say?
They say, literally thought to myself, I should do something impossible like SSX. Oh no.
you made an easy one. Although although if you are replacing one letter, it might be the rules where you have to replace both S's, so you just invented eeks.
Oh no.
Or you can make
X,
SSX.
Where you have so many it's X, so many injuries that you had to become an X snowboarder.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's see. David says, Baldur's Mage 3. I'm sorry, but that didn't really change the game. Nope. Jala, what does Ruki say?
Ruki says, a Prague tale. It's Ace Attorney, but set in the Czech Republic. The protagonist can control rats and use them to investigate crimes and prove their client's innocence. If you fail, something, something, Requiem.
It's like a Pokemon Red, Pokemon Blue thing.
Like.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Nicholas say?
Nicholas says, Elden Bing, a game about Microsoft AI search engine infecting pages with very questionable elderly AI-generated porn. Plays like Hypnospace Outlaw.
Okay. I'm not sure if I'm down for the AI elderly porn, but I think that you just may have tricked me into playing something very unpleasant because you invoked Hypnospace Outlaw. God, that's a good game.
I think Lemon Souls would probably be a better one for that.
It's too many letters changed, though.
Yeah.
Demon Souls? Lemon Souls?
You're close. There we go. It sounded like you said Lennon Souls.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Yeah. Like V.I. Lennon. But Lemon Souls is very good. Okay, that works very well. I get it. Call it a way, Homer. That was very clever. Let's see. Who had that one? That was you, Ben. So, Dennis, what does Thrensa say?
Thrensa says, change I, Divine Cybermancy, to by Divine Cybermancy. The main character is sick of whatever the heck happened in that fever dream of a game and went fishing.
Hmm. I've not played enough EYE Divine Cybermancy to know anything more than, that's a very off-putting and hard to get into game that people say they love. Yeah. And Dog Nozzle is disqualified because they added a letter instead of changing one. They said Final Flight, the Kamikaze Flight Simulator. So you broke the rules.
Tisk.
Can't be.
Don't you know Final Fight is spelled with two F's?
it's one of those little things where like, hey, what's wrong with this sentence? And it turns out it has two the's in a row, but you don't notice because it's not a line break. Yeah. for mine, take Alien Isolation and make it Alan Isolation.
Barbie reference?
No, this can go a bunch. It's Tim Allen. It's Tim Allen.
Okay, yeah,
either
okay.
Tim Allen has to face against a xenomorph, or it's just Tim Allen in a box alone for a very long time, which I think we can all get behind.
Yeah. Michigan would be so sad.
Let's see, Jala, how about you?
I have two. So I have Lord of the Rings, which is a Hobbit comfort soul food cooking game that's like an MMO.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings Online,
Z.
With crafting. Anyway, and there's also Assassin's Creep, an anti-dating sim where Ezio tries to get rid of potential suitors without killing them.
There we go. Assassin's Creep is good.
I love that.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Okay, so I have two answers as well. If we're invoking the rule where you change all the letters to another one, Danky Kang is the clear answer. but if that is not in play, my answer is I'm going to change Mortal Kombat to Mortal Kombat, but I'm going to spell it the correct way to give an FU to all the edgy people.
Oh, oh man. Nothing will change. I just want to fix it. Oh, that's good. Good, fun little prompt. And everybody was nice and creative with it.
I got to close this out, man.
Oh, you do, don't you?
I had the best one. I have Spec Odds the Line. So it's a betting simulator where you slowly realize how sinister all these betting apps actually are.
Oh, I mean, also known as Real Life for a Sensible Person. You can't escape them. Oh, gosh. Sorry, I didn't mean to try to skip you, Dennis.
That's all good.
Yeah. Thank you for posting that, Dennis, and thank you everybody for participating. If you would like to be a part of these, go to Facebook, join the Duckfeed community group, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games and how they make us feel. I'm going to start because I have the most important thing. Hey, folks. They're bringing Power Wash Simulator to VR.
Oh my God. People will never come out.
Bye. It's been so fun.
Bye, reality.
Oh, man.
I'm just closing out the season. I've already power washed all the things there are to power wash around my home. And I'm going to just disappear. It's coming to Quest 2 and Quest 3. Which will be fun, and I mean, it's going to be Power Wash Simulator, but it's coming out at the beginning of November, and I don't know that I have anything more to say about that. If that sounds cool to you, it's going to sound cool to you, and if it doesn't, I don't care to hear because I'll be gone.
So guys, what should we do now that the podcast is ending?
Let's see here. Jala, you have a sad story. What's happening? What's happening in the world of Shining Force?
Yeah. So Shining Force illustrator, character designer, and scenario writer Yoshitaka Tamaki passed away in July at age 55 after a battle with lung cancer. He worked on classic titles such as Shining in the Darkness, Shining Force, Alundra, Landstalker, Time Stalkers, Shining Soul, and others. So, real formative artwork. Really, I brought this mostly because I really encourage people to go check out the artwork for these games if you do not already in your brain have the visual of what it looks like. And I don't mean like the weird American box art. I mean like the actual character artwork and everything. Definitely take a look at that. It's notable because, you know, like that style really kind of set it apart from a lot of other stuff at the time, at least for me.
It's very expressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Made a lot of cool stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's go from somber to very angering.
Hey
Ben.
That's me.
what travesty of late capitalism is Epic going through now?
Yeah, this is kind of like a theme, it seems like, or at least this is definitely a theme with larger companies right now. It's like reorg season for a lot of big ones.
You know what happens? Interest rates went up. Free money went away.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. So in this particular case, it's affecting Epic as a company. But the article is quite infuriating to read because the main headline story is that they cut 16% of their staff, which is about 800 employees. But some details within the article and the statement from their CEO, was it Tim Sweeney, talk about how like they want to divest in some of their purchase companies, namely Bandcamp.
That fucking wild to me.
Which is like a very humble like music release platform that I like and I like to participate in. But
it's the reason that indie music exists today.
But and also coincidentally, recently become unionized as well, mm-hmm. which is just like how many times can this happen? Where it's like, for example, like Starbucks stores being closed down right after they get unionized because of it. All of a sudden being in a dangerous neighborhood. It's like, anyway, so stuff like that. And the fact that they're laying off all these employees, but they're still actively hiring right now. It's like, things like that are just very, very infuriating. So,
when you have a license, go ahead.
And they're still profitable, by the way. They're still making money. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, what gets me is that one of the reasons cited was their ongoing legal battle with Apple. That, you know, they're saying, oh, we got to reduce our legal expenses, but we're continuing the fight against Apple and Google, so we have to fire you all. It's like, that is a giant pissing contest that you guys started that put a whole bunch of people who use your platform, like, in a position of... will my platform show up on Apple? And has not really changed anything.
I'm gonna counteract you on that one. It absolutely has. Antitrust rulings have been put down, and Apple is going to need to start allowing third party app stores to be put on it. I would say this is one thing where they probably, I mean, like, yeah, ultimately this does boil down to the great game of pissing matches between billionaires, but also, like, there actually has been positive movement on that front. Is it worth these people's jobs? I don't know, but
yeah, I have not seen one game that actually successfully uses a third party, like, monetization system.
It hasn't been brought in yet. Is the thing, like, the litigation is still pending. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Well, then I stand corrected. But yeah, so legal pissing battles are taking a toll.
Still plenty of reasons to hate the company.
You have the most popular game in the world. You have a license to print money. And when you are still not profitable enough, we really ought to start asking extremely hard questions about why that is not profitable enough. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense, not at all. And this is in addition, I was looking, I just saw a couple of other Twitch just laid off a bunch of their staff. Somebody else just had big layoffs, but it's absolutely a thing with Epic. It's like, you couldn't have waited a couple of weeks. I understand this was timed around whatever, end of a quarter or whatever, but, like, come on, your biggest competitor in the engine space just tripped on their own dick, and then you're going to turn around and do this. Yeah. Hate it.
Yeah.
Mm. I thought that we were going to get a very fun story from Dennis about a laptop, but I'm just going to...
No, we can do both. Okay. They'll be quick. Yeah. We can do both.
Okay. Yeah. What laptop made an appearance in national in international news today?
Apparently,
or yesterday.
Yeah, Trump's lawyer at his court date for one of his civil suits. And you guys, it is going to be a wild week. I cannot wait. I cannot imagine what the people listening on Friday have experienced.
Yeah. I mean, specifically, this is the civil suit brought in New York. This is state civil that is about Trump's inconsistent and, one would say, fraudulent evaluation of the worth of his own assets, basically underestimating for tax bills and overestimating for purposes of loans and such. Yeah.
Yep. And among many just hilarious foibles, we'll call them generously, one sharp-eyed person picked out that his attorney showed up with what appears to be an Asus ROG gaming laptop as her computer that proceeded to have its RGB cycle through colors during the hearing.
Honestly,
had the underglow respect, going and dude. Everything.
Honestly, slay.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to refer to it as Asus from now on, because that name is so much more fitting.
One of those things I always read, never have to say out loud. But yeah, one could compare the changing color to the color draining from Trump's face as he realized how screwed he is.
Yeah. So this is Alina Haba. She's one of Trump's TV lawyers, one of the more just shameless people going out and being just telling bald-faced lies about stuff. She also had some blowback on the Rudy Giuliani front in the past. And her biggest fumble, aside from the absolutely baller move of bringing this RGB laptop into the, like, that's cool, but the biggest bumble is the reason that Trump didn't get a jury trial was because she didn't submit a form. Or no, it's even worse than that. There was a checkbox. Yeah,
right. I don't know about that. Like, I know that is the spin that the team is, or, you know, that's the truth of it. The spin the Trump team is putting on is, I should have a jury and I don't, so I need a redo. I kind of think that a jury would almost be worse for him.
That's the thing. Like they probably at some point decided like no jury will, you know, we can't get a good jury in New York or whatever, not understanding that a default judgment would not be much better.
But then he proceeds to just attack the judge and the clerk in their own courtroom. So that's
smart
play.
God,
I hope he's in jail when you guys are listening to
it's this. It's a wonderful bold strategy, Cotton. But let's see how it plays out. What's the actual story you brought?
Yeah, okay. So just dunking on assholes aside, Netflix announced that Devil May Cry is going to get a new anime.
Cool.
And this is very exciting. I've watched an episode or two of the one that exists right now, and it definitely shows its age a little bit. So the trailer they released only says coming soon, and it only shows just a little bit of action. But any excuse to watch Dante slice up some demons is welcome.
Is there an indication of what storyline or continuity they're going to be picking?
Absolutely nothing that I've seen so far. Just Dante being Dante, man.
Okay. Yeah. Probably trying to recreate the success of Castlevania. It seems like.
Yeah. I think this is even the same people. I will riot if they ever try to do a live action.
Yeah.
I think it's,
that doesn't
too much style in this game to, in this story, it is too dependent on just crazy, amazing stuff that like watching that, done in live action would be like watching a Marvel movie where it's like, these people are in front of green screen and like it looks cool, but it also like, there's no grounding here. So, but yeah, new anime, bring it.
Cool. Awesome. Well, all of us have gone, and that seems like a show to me. How do you all feel about buttoning up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 475. We appreciate you taking the time. If you would like to help us out, you can leave a rating or review, tell your friends, back us on Patreon, and subscribe and come back next week. Those are all big things. Still no news yet about Real Lich Hours, the Baldur's Gate 3 show. Still waiting on art and getting a structure together, but trust me, you will hear when that thing is about to come out.
And news on our competitor podcast will be coming soon.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Right, Ben?
I will break your backs. Jala, what's happening on Jala's place?
The last episode of my show was on, Tenchi Muyo in Love, an anime movie. And the one before that was on toxic masculinity. And a whole lot of people have been strongly responding to that episode, saying that it is very good, it is very enlightening, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. There will be a part two coming out next year for that, with the same folks that were on this time. So that's the last topic and the last piece of media. Yay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you are patiently waiting for the strike to end, as we are.
So like the Dishonored episodes, like it's actually kind of good because since everything's been blowing up anyway for me, it's nice to have the extra time. The Dishonored mm-hmm. episodes that I was planning to do will be out sometime in 2024. Mm-hmm. However, Simulacra, because it is a Malaysian dev, has nothing to do with the strike, so that episode will still come out.
Nice.
Dope.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Dennis, you got anything?
No, I tried posting the multiplayer this week to Blue Sky as well. Mm-hmm. Got a couple of responses. So if that is a more natural habitat for you than Facebook or our Slack channel, you're welcome to follow me there. You'll get the name in a second, and you'll see the multiplayer prompts there as well.
Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Jalachan, and all the places you can find me, including Blue Sky, Jalachan.place, etc.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one, but it's a good lemon souls.
Yes. I was indignantly only going to suggest that one since I was told it didn't work at first.
Okay. It just went over my head. I was not thinking Demon Souls.
It was a Chardonnay blinder.
I also have Bodies of Pile and Enhanced Eye.
Yes. Cool. I mean, it sounds like Lemon Souls to me. Yeah.
Does Dennis... Yeah.
Oh, Dennis. I had Bodies of Pile. I had Lemon Souls. I also had Sharpen Your Shoulder.
Oh, okay.
But I heartily recommend Lemon Souls as well.
Okay. Cool. Well, Lemon Souls it is. It is decided. I mean, it won't be immediately apparent what it's about. I know. I'm good.
Awesome.